This podcast is presented by Pacific Office Automation, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. Learn more at pacificoffice.com.
Into the end zone for the touchdown. Hollywood Brown has been spectacular. Connor to the five and into the end zone for the touchdown.
Welcome to Cardinals Underground, presented by Pacific Office Automation. Visit pacificoffice.com. Problem solved.
Touchdown, Kyler Murray. That defender is in multiple pieces.
Oh, that was nasty right there, right?
The latest news and notes from the insiders who cover the team.
Drilled by Simmons. Isaiah Simmons is balling.
Bring it on, bring it on.
Slammed to the ground by Buda Baker. Like a torpedo, he came flying into the backfield.
I ain't scared of nobody.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Okay, so obviously I'm not Paul Calvisi. Although he's here, and you will get plenty of Paul Calvisi.
I'm here.
But I had to open the show here, guys, because this has been weighing on me heavy for pretty much since about 15 minutes after we got off the air last week for the podcast.
Danny just stood up in her chair. Yeah, she's literally on the edge of her seat right now.
I mean, there's been a couple sleepless nights. I wasn't sure exactly how I was going to get through this. But I got back to my desk. I'm writing up the description of last week's podcast and all that stuff. And I flipped over my bingo card.
Oh, come on.
And I realized I got bingo last week.
Oh,
and
of
I forgot
course you
to
did.
Say something.
Oh, you're going to try and cheat for a second time.
I was so waiting for him to say Isaiah last week, which he never did, that I didn't realize I had the diagonal bingo already. And it was just
is that a thing? Diagonal bingo? Is that allowed in all bingo halls?
I just
diagonal?
Think it's getting a little suspicious that the first time you got a bingo, you led the witness, aka Paul, into
That's
saying
true.
What
I did
you needed,
do that.
And now all of a sudden, in hindsight, you had bingo, but nobody was there when it actually happened, or you didn't make it known when it actually happened.
Well,
I'm just saying,
I mean,
it's getting a little sus, Aaron.
I understand that, and
now we don't have new bingo cards because
I understand that.
So can I leave?
I realized
What's
that
the point?
This was going to be a problem all the way around. I realized Danny was not going to let this go. I realized that she tends to
She tends to what, Darren?
Nothing. Forget that. I'm going to move on from this.
What does she tend to do, Darren?
We could have this podcast.
What were the words?
Brought
to you by who?
You can see you got to write it down, Darren. If you're going to start
Pacific
Cardinals Underground.
Pacific Office Automation.
You got to write it down at top of the sheet so you don't forget it. Pacific Office Automation.
I am riled up, Paul.
And let me tell you.
Let's get going.
When leading the witness becomes badgering the witness, meaning yours truly, I'm going to HR. I'm just going to make that known right now. So
I'll go with you.
If it crosses the line at some point. And bring the bingo card because we're going to have that reviewed. By a separate entity.
Somebody on Twitter did recommend when I posted on Twitter last week after the show and I was wearing my shirt that Darren got us
that's right.
from the combine.
That was
and
just
said
last
that we
week.
Should, that we should make a bingo card shirt. And I thought, that's a great idea.
I beg to differ on that one. Beg to differ on that one.
Darren, what were the words?
The words that I had?
Come on!
Calvisi Consulting, which I believe was like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Ding.
I had ding too. I had Crumbles paper.
Come on.
Crumbles paper and then Taps mic.
I didn't have Taps mic on my card this time.
I had it right in the center. So it changed a lot of the dynamic.
I feel so profiled. That's what I feel.
Well, you have your list from last week of things that we shouldn't say, right? Are you going to keep a mark of?
Yeah, we'll get into that. You're on a need to know basis when it comes to that.
We're going to get nailed.
I figure, you know, if Meek Mill can give advice to Robert Kraft.
Do you know who Meek Mill is?
Then, of course I do. I have a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old at home. Of course I know who Meek Mill is. I mean, if
Arthur Blank was talking about 2 Chainz.
If players can now wear the number 0 in the NFL, then, I mean, virtually anything can happen on this edition of Cardinals Underground. That's my segue to get into. By the way, who is worthy of the number 0? Because that was breaking news on the Red Sea Report. Craig Grealoux brought that up. Literally, it shows you
where the meetings were, that was the breaking news.
That's true. We'll reverse engineer into that in a moment, exactly what was and wasn't headline news at the owners' meetings where you were in attendance the last 48 hours. But the number 0 can't just be handed out like any sort of number. And when it came up live at on Red Sea Report, yours truly, I jumped. It's one of the few times I actually had the audacity to cut off Kyle Vandenbosch. And I just said, there's only one guy in this roster right here, right now, that you instantly can associate with number zero. And it would be, I think we all agree,
Buda Baker.
Buda Baker. Now, if you were to take Will Anderson, I thought about this a little bit more. Will Anderson, upon entering into the NFL, do you give zero to a rookie?
Well, we're saying zero is a really big deal because nobody's worn it.
Correct.
So then I guess if that's what you're basing it off of, no.
I mean, it can only be an elite talent wearing zero, correct? They're not going to give it
disagree.
To some.
Well, first of all, there's a couple things. Buda Baker changing his number for a fourth or getting a fourth number in his NFL career.
What was it? It was
36.
That's right.
And then 32.
Then 32.
Now three. And now we're talking about changing
again. Fans might not be happy having to buy another jersey.
Buda Baker would have to buy out all the Buda Baker. That's the other thing people forget is like if a player wants to change a number, he has to basically buy out the stock of whoever does the jerseys, Fanatic or Nike or whoever it is. And then they have to be willing. I mean, Dalvin Cook didn't change his number for an entire year because he didn't want to have to pay the amount of money it was going to cost him to buy out his jersey number. So I don't see Buda doing that at this point. I wouldn't be surprised, and I speculated this when I wrote about it yesterday on azcardinals.com. I wouldn't be surprised if it was one of the new guys. There's a lot of guys that don't have numbers yet, like a Kazir White or a Zach Pascal, maybe.
Yeah, could be. But you're right on Buda Baker, especially since his profile, you would think his personal brand only elevated with Hard Knocks all of last season.
That's true.
I'm wondering how many more Buda Baker jerseys were sold nationally after basically he dominated and starred in Hard Knocks the end of last season. I'd be curious to see what the data might be from the league merchandise folks out there. But we'll see. Number zero. I'm just thinking it has to go to someone who's worthy of that. Like if you're Georgia, right? A Georgia football, they only give it to a 5-star blue chip type performer.
If Will Anderson gets drafted, I mean, you're talking about making him your centerpiece. I personally think if it made it all the way to the draft class, and I'm not 100% sure it will, I could see that being a possibility. But I don't know. Like Deebo Samuel came out on social media after the news came out, and he said, I'm not a fan of zero as a jersey number. And I think people were thinking, oh, maybe he'll go because of Deebo, that he might want to change.
Could work, yeah, that could. Well, look, whether it's a Kaiser White or some of these other, you know, names that have been added slowly but surely to the Cardinals roster, you know, Chris Barnes, a linebacker, Josh Woods, Zach Pascal. I tweeted out at Paul Calvisi that perhaps the Cardinals rebuilding the method to the madness right now is trying to construct a mindset first. Because if there's a common thread in a lot of these free agents who have been signed, including some of your own, like a Will Hernandez, the Nasty, you know, Kelvin Beachum, who could easily be our governor right now. He's so well-spoken and accomplished, but you get him between the white lines and he'll fight you. So I'm wondering if that this rebuild, retool, reset, whatever you want to call it, has begun with a mindset in mind first. Instead of skill set, mindset has been first and foremost in a lot of ways with Jonathan Gannon.
I would imagine that's not just with Gannon, but also with general manager Monty Austin-Fort. I feel like if you are truly going to try and change the culture, that needs to start with the mindset and what are the expectations of the players that you're retaining, the players you're bringing in, the coaches, front office staff, all of that. I think that's the way that you make sure everybody is on the same page. So to me, that makes sense that that's what they're focusing on, especially because they haven't had a chance to get out on the field with the players, but also kind of setting that precedence of this is what we expect. We expect you to hold yourselves and those around you accountable, and these are the standards that we're setting.
Like, for example, if a Will Anderson comes in, it makes perfect sense. Not only the Cardinals' dire need for an edge rusher, not only the fact he's highly decorated and skilled, but the thing I like the most in his scouting report says he does not take plays off. He has that sort of mindset. That would be a perfect fit. In fact, I've already, here we go with the paper crumb. I've already written it down. I have Will Anderson penciled into the Arizona Cardinals either at 3 or 4. I just want you to know that. I'm operating under that auspices going forward.
Sidebar, I think we should make a call in Audible right now and say continue on these bingo boards and we'll do blackout style where you have to get every single one on your board to win. We'll continue that way.
How about that? Okay.
I do think that's interesting, Paul, now going back on track of when you say 3 or 4. Because now with the swirling news of Lamar Jackson, who on social media recently said he had asked for a trade, made it clear he does not want to stay in Baltimore, which isn't entirely up to him. But some of the teams I was seeing that might make sense or might be interested, one of them was Indianapolis. And so that would be really interesting if that somehow pans out before the draft. How does that affect the Cardinals? I mean, maybe you just stay with, in terms of, you stay with 3, is that going to affect another team who wants to trade up? Because we've been talking about, ideally, you would trade down to 4, still get who you want, and get some extra capital.
Yep.
I agree. I got it. Why wouldn't whether he plays in Baltimore be completely up to him?
Well, because he's still under contract there, right?
Like with the Ravens?
Yeah.
Lamar? He's been franchise tagged.
Right.
So it is complete. If he signs it, he'll play there.
Right.
The Ravens will take him back.
Right.
That's his choice.
But if he doesn't sign it and they don't trade him.
Okay, that's true.
I shouldn't have said play. I guess maybe stay in Baltimore would have been.
I guess ultimately I do think it's his choice. It's just you'd have to give in to the Ravens. But
yes.
That's neither here nor there, I guess, in this point. I would say that, yeah, it absolutely remains. It remains intriguing. Let's say that the Cardinals could end up going from 3 to 4, still getting Will Anderson. And I find it even more intriguing after the Colts basically came out and they didn't completely shoot down the Lamar stuff, but their owner is talking about it. This is a good year to draft a quarterback. And it just feels really strongly that they're going to want to draft a quarterback. So then again, do they get to the point where they're comfortable enough with either Will Levis or Anthony Richardson so that, well, we don't need to trade with the Cardinals because even if somebody trades up ahead of us and takes one of them, we can take the other one.
The latest NFL.com mock draft that I saw this week has Will Levis falling out of the first round. So
I just can't keep up.
Who knows?
There's a lot of mock drafts. If somebody is trying to do a mock draft tracker, there's a lot of mock drafts out there.
Somebody told me there's a mock draft out there that has Hendon Hooker, the Tennessee quarterback, going number 5 to Seattle.
Yes, there is that. I saw that one.
So think about it. Well, look, if you go to the game film and the game film only in the SEC, most will tell you that Hendon Hooker's game film is a lot better than Will Levis and Anthony Richardson. In fact, if you go to the Anthony Richardson against Will Levis game, which was week 2 of this college football season, it was Kentucky at Florida, and Kentucky won that game. Anthony Richardson in that game was 15 of 43 passing.
Mm.
Horrendous. So now they're also, and you heard Frank Reich trying to talk it into existence during the owners' meetings, Darren, where he said that on film there are plays, there are instances where Anthony Richardson is a top of the draft performer. So you have this whole variety, right, of opinion on where the quarterbacks may or may not go. Now, if you're the Cardinals, obviously you're telling Jim Irsay and Chris Ballard in Indianapolis, you better come up to number 3 because somebody will, and they're going to take that quarterback that you've needed desperately ever since Andrew Luck retired out of nowhere. And, of course, the Colts are going to say, well, that's great. Okay, someone else can trade up. Then you can fall to 7 or 9 or out of the top 10, and you're not going to get your guy Will Anderson. So you can see this back and forth between the Colts and the Cardinals.
Absolutely. And even the quarterback conversation and who could end up being there at 3 is fascinating. I was there with my good friend Darren Gant, who is basically he does what I do for the Panthers, and obviously they're drafting number 1. And he and I were having a conversation with Pete Prisco of CBS Sports. And
there's a lot of snark and saltiness in that conversation.
A long time, yeah, there is. Curmudgeoned, as you might say, and fellow ASU grad. But Pete is somebody who does not believe in Bryce Young because of his size.
Wow.
And his frame. And he doesn't think that is going to translate well. So I think there's a lot of unknowns. I mean, one of the reasons Richardson is so is being considered or talked about as potentially that high is because of his frame and his athleticism, not because of what necessarily what he does. Whereas you have Bryce Young, who has done a lot, and yet, and arguably he's done more than anybody else. I mean, CJ Stroud looks the part, but if you just take, if you take a lot of CJ Stroud's game, you know, has he done much? And somebody else made the point at the meetings to me. I'm like, CJ Stroud and I'm not saying they're the same player in any way, stretch of the imagination, but CJ Stroud is in that same spot that Matt Leinart was in once upon a time, which is he had three or four receivers that are first round draft picks, are going to be first round draft picks. He's got three or four linemen that are going to be first round or second round draft picks. You know, you're surrounded by so much talent.
Yep. And look, that's plausible. I guess Team CJ Stroud would say, go turn on the film from the playoff loss to Georgia.
Playoffs?
And they contend that he was finally healthy because he got banged up early in Ohio State's this last season. So he had that 6-week layoff, got healthy, and they finally unshackled him and his dual threat ability in that game. So a lot of people are thinking, okay, CJ Stroud, plus he has the measurables, he has the size. So when you see former Cardinals quarterback Josh McCown at his pro day, and he's caught on camera saying to CJ Stroud, hey, when you're living in Charlotte, we'll go find a court and we'll hoop it up. A lot of people are thinking, interesting. Panthers have already made their decision. So let's say the Houston Texans, let's just say, get freaked out by the size of a Bryce Young. And they go Anthony Richardson at number two. That's our new best-case scenario for the Arizona Cardinals, dare I say, because Bryce Young is on the board at three. Who's calling with what sort of Mondo package at number three if Bryce Young or CJ Stroud is sitting there at three because Anthony Richardson went in the top two?
That might be your best hot take yet, Paul. Maybe Atlanta? They're what, yeah. Eight?
Raiders?
Seven, eight, nine? Atlanta?
Raiders? Raiders come up. They supposedly had serious talks with the Bears for number one overall.
Lions?
Lions? Lions have a number 18 in addition to number 6?
Brad Spielberger of Pro Football Focus did a mock draft. And if you're going to do the mock drafts with the trade down stuff, I like the ones where you actually like say what the Cardinals would get out of it so you can get an idea. And that's what he did. He had the Lions trading up with the Cardinals to 3. So the Cardinals went back to 6. But what he had the Lions giving up to go from 6 to 3.
Oh, please tell.
Well, obviously they swapped the first round picks. You got a second round and I think it was 48 and 81. So a second round and a third round. And you got a first and a fourth next year.
Whoa.
Wow.
Done. I will take that.
100% done.
That's what I would think. And that's where people are like, well, why would you trade down? I have so many people saying, you have to take Will Anderson. Why would the Cardinals trade down? That is why.
That would be why.
Because when you start seeing what is potentially there, and if somebody wants to get up that badly to get whomever. Now, in that scenario, in his mock draft, Will Anderson ends up with the Seattle Seahawks. So you better be prepared that not only do you not get Will Anderson, but now he could torment you every year for 15 years.
By the way, would that first-round pick next year from the Lions be the Lions pick, who they figure to be a pretty decent team, and that would be the second half of round one, or would it be still a Rams first-round pick? Because the Rams are figuring to stink.
My guess is it would be the Lions pick, and that's what you have to keep in mind when you're trying to let these teams get better. You know, that's again something that could happen. And the Lions, the reason the Lions don't mind it as much either is because they have their own first, the sixth is the Rams pick.
Yep.
They have their own pick at 18 that they'd still have a first round pick this year. So they'd still have two first round picks this year.
By the way, Mike Vrabel is on the screen as we continue here with Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation. Danny, if you're looking for a hot take on the whole D-Hop trade front, as we go from quarterback and number 3 trade update desk to now DeAndre Hopkins, do you see what Mike Vrabel said at the owners' meetings here yesterday?
I did not.
He's talking about receiver. I think we're trying to put the right pieces in place. This is via the team's website reporter. Whether it's a big fast guy, a small fast guy, whether it's a smaller, quicker player, you're trying to find that fit and value at every position and blah, blah, blah. And then Rand Carthon, their new GM, talks about their serious need at receiver as well and how they're trying to exercise patience and allowing it to come to fruition. A lot of doublespeak right there. The translation is the Titans are aware and they acknowledge they have a serious need in the receiver room, especially for a number one receiver. And then when you consider the relationship Monty Osifor still has with his former team, I'm wondering if we put the Tennessee Titans near the top of the most likely destination trade spots for D-Hop.
Well, they just recently added Adam Thielen, so something to keep in mind there.
No, didn't he go to the Panthers?
Thought he went to Carolina.
Yeah.
They've been getting – so they have Treylon Burks.
I was thinking the blue teams in my head. I know some people in Tennessee. Burks was kind of disappointing to them last year.
Which, by the way, is a shout-out as I tap the mic to all 31 other teams out there are thinking we can get a receiver in the draft. That's what Tennessee thought last year when they traded away A.J. Brown. And Treylon Burks was very disappointing from day one.
That was from the beginning.
From the beginning.
Like training camp.
Remember we went to Nashville? Yes. And he had allergies or he had some sort of condition.
I don't like allergies. Some of us have allergies.
No, it was asthma, actually. Something like that. He couldn't practice a whole bunch.
Yeah.
He was behind from the get-go. Yeah. Never made a difference. A.J. Brown blowed it up in Philadelphia. And guess what? It cost the GM his job, ostensibly. Most think John Robinson got canned because he just got dominated in that trade with the Eagles.
Well, he didn't sign A.J. Brown is where he screwed up.
I guess I have a follow-up question for my answer for that is, we know that Hop no longer has the no-trade clause right because he was suspended. So when it comes to making a trade, from your experience, I guess both of you covering this team and the league longer than me, how much of the decision is still made respecting what the player wants? Knowing the type of team that Hop wants to go play with, type of quarterback, right, maybe not too far from winning, how much of that really gets put into consideration when the GM is putting pen to paper?
For me, and it's hard to know because we don't really know how Monty Osifor operates at this point, I think you keep it in mind. You know, obviously the relationship you have with the player in the first place probably impacts some of that, but I think you keep it in mind. But ultimately, if there's one team that's willing to offer you a second round pick and a player, then there's really not. And I would make that point to the player. Like I understand, but the reality is this is the only team that wants you at this level. And so, I mean, I think that's part of it. But I don't even know when we've talked about this last week. We've talked about this a lot. The wide receiver market, trade market isn't great. Even Tennessee, I think to myself, man, you're trading for a high-profile receiver when you had one. You already had one that was younger and was trending up. And with all due respect to DeAndre Hopkins, he's going to be on the downslope of his career. That's just what the timeline says. Not that he's playing like that. It would be tough. I think in some ways it would be a tough sell for Tennessee.
Maybe. But once again, their need is real. For a number one receiver, that was a serious hole in their offense a year ago, and maybe they need to generate a little fanfare as well as they make their drive for their brand new stadium, and who knows what else goes into
You're
a decision like that.
You're always looking at that big picture stuff, Paul. I got to give you that.
And you know what? Sean Payton came out and said, guess what? The Broncos are not trading Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton, because there was a lot of noise about that. And he shot that down, maybe because KJ Hamler tore the chest muscle. And Tim Patrick still coming back from the torn ACL that wiped out his 2022 season. So guess what? Now there's even fewer players on the trade market. That supply is even less, which you would think would ramp up the demand for DeAndre Hopkins. What I also find intriguing is, 5 days ago as of the recording of this, you had that report from Jeremy Fowler who said the Cardinals are standing firm on asking for a second-round pick. They're looking for a Christian McCaffrey-type package, right? And then all the blowback from all the other insiders who heard from the other teams who are ostensibly in the DeAndre Hopkins market. You had James Palmer saying Kansas City is standing standing by was Sky Moore and MVS and Kadarius Toney, even though they lost Juju Smith-Schuster and Mecole Hardman, right? And then Albert Breer came out and said, no, the Texans, you know, the Texans deal where they gave up, you know, where they got a fifth and a sixth for Brandon Cooks, so that's more the norm. And then the Bills beat writer saying, barring a significant development, the Bills are not trading for DeAndre Hopkins.
By the way,
it's funny how that happens, dude.
I love when Tim Graham tweeted that because I had just returned from the meetings, the annual party that they have at the owners' meetings on Monday night. I had just left there. I know Tim Graham was out there. That's all the GMs are there, all the coaches are there. And I'm just like picturing like Tim Graham's having a drink and he's talking to somebody with the Bills and is he drinking and saying, yeah, we're not freaking trading for this guy. I mean, he literally tweeted that at like 9:40.
So wait a minute, Danny, I think you agree that, you know, it's one thing to have Darren tell us about the owner's meetings, but we need to ask him, tell us about the owner's party.
Well,
let's hear about the party.
Let's be very frank here, people. All you need to get into that party is a credential, and you guys both had credentials. You could have gone to the party.
I did. I had plans Monday. I knew about it, but I had plans on Monday. Yes. So.
I did not know that there was a party and that I had access.
I sent you also the little game plan of the meetings, and it was in there that you were invited to that party.
Where was the party? Can you say?
Oh, it's at the Biltmore.
Everything's at the Biltmore.
They redid the Biltmore since the meetings were there in 2019. So like that middle part is like really gorgeous, and it's
it gets worse. I didn't know that either.
A lot of food. It's a nice time.
Next time, Paul, we can carpool.
Missed opportunity for Paul Calvisi.
Let's
not let your better half know about it because you can bring your wife too.
Yeah, she enjoyed the Super Bowl party, that's for sure. So please, let the better half know about that. How often do the owners' meetings come through the AZ? Every 3 years or so?
I think it's I think it's basically every 2 years now. They used to go to Florida, here, Palm Springs, and Hawaii. They haven't gone to Hawaii in a long time. I think they stopped going to Palm Springs. I think COVID screwed some things up, but I think ultimately it'll be back here in 2 years. I think it bounces back between the Breakers in Florida and the Biltmore.
Because we knocked it out of the park. Dare I say the AZ? I mean, our weather during Super Bowl week owners' meetings.
Couldn't draw it up any better.
I mean, that's a double ding. Put that on your bingo card and smoke it, everybody. How about this? What about some of the other headlines we got? The Jonathan Gannon meeting the media. Darren, what do we need to know? Kyler Murray, what do you give us on Kyler Murray? The rehab update desk, what do we know there?
All he said was that Kyler last week went to Dallas to check in with a surgeon, but he's been here. But Jonathan Gannon is not going to do any timelines on Kyler's injury or any injuries, it sounds like, because he goes, it usually blows up in my face, and so we're just going to wait and see, which right now really doesn't mean a whole lot. When we get to closer to training camp or when we get to the first part of the season, I'll be interested to see if he holds to that and if he can hold to that. It reminds me a little bit about the Kevin Durant stuff. It's like you can say you don't want to have a timeline, but that doesn't mean the questions are going to go away. I mean, I heard Monty Williams like kind of react poorly to the questions about Durant, and it's like, You don't get to be mad. He's like the best player and everybody's waiting for him to come back, and you're going to be vague about stuff. Then the questions are going to keep being asked, and I have a feeling the same thing is going to happen with Kyler.
I mean, he's been a Phoenix Suns player for 2 months and he hasn't played a home game yet. You're going to get questions. That's the way that's going to work. Speaking of injuries, did Jonathan Gannon make news with the Isaiah Simmons comment?
Here's what I...
Because he said there's good news on the health of Isaiah Simmons, and then he patted his right shoulder. If you look at the video, and you're like, well, wait a minute,
that's
what?
That's his left shoulder, but that's okay.
Okay. I patted the wrong one.
No, you patted the right one. I do believe, I thought it was his left one, because I was sitting there. I thought, maybe it was here. I don't know. But yeah, I do wonder significantly if that must have been a thing. And then I was talking to Craig Grealoux later, because Gree is the kind of guy who's going to research the hell out of this stuff, and he did, and we remember, and he went back and looked, and in the last game of the season, Isaiah Simmons did seem to jack up a shoulder at one point.
I gotta go to my sideline reporter notebook, because I do put that stuff in there if a guy comes over and he's ailing and hurting.
I do recall him having to come out, and then And it was in the second half, I think, and the game had already kind of gotten out of hand a little bit. And again, because it was the last game of the season, there are no injury reports after that.
Yep.
But that is, I'm guessing. But it was kind of funny, though, Paul. He tapped his shoulder, then he kind of hesitated, and then he said, good news about his health. He didn't say about his shoulder, but it felt like he was going there.
Right.
And then he stopped himself.
He kind of became the hockey head coach. It's an upper body injury, something like that. Yeah, Danny, I found it curious when Jonathan Gannon said, we have a quote, a few guys who can play center, have played center. Can we name names here? I need an update. Who are the guys who have played center or can play center at the moment?
Lasita Smith.
Okay. Froholt.
Froholt.
Yelda Froholt.
I believe Froholt.
That to me was really kind of the one thing where I'm like, not to say like I don't believe it, because it's true. Right now they do have players who have played center, but neither of those are going to be their starting center.
Here's the thing, especially when I went back and listened to it. He did say, I've got guys who can play center. But then he went on to basically say, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was essentially, that can get us through the OTAs in the offseason.
Okay.
So my feeling is what he was saying ultimately was, we can go field a practice right now. Now, is that going to be who we have in training camp? Is that going to be who we have when we start the season? Probably not. He didn't say any of those things, but that's kind of how I interpreted it, because he did make it clear about, if we went on the grass today, we have guys who can play center. So I think that was more of it's like everything. You know they're going to add a center. You know they're going
to
add a center.
Still need to add a left guard.
I hope they add another guard. But again, Will Hernandez played left guard his whole time in the league until he got here. So could you put Marcus Hayes at right guard and Will Hernandez at left guard? I think that's still possible. Is Josh Jones a possibility at guard? I think that's still possible. You have Froholt, but I think center is the one spot you definitely would need to do something at this point. And there's other spots like that. I mean, there's going to be a cornerback that's going to play for this team that I don't think is on the roster right now. I'm going to say that right now.
What if that still happens from a trade? What if we keep talking about a Hopkins trade and it's not just draft picks? What if it's with the team and it is for a center or a cornerback and a lower draft pick?
I could see that.
Maybe you trade from 3 to 4. Indianapolis gives you a pick and a player by the name of Ryan Kelly.
I see what you did there.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's the – or because I already have Will Anderson written in as an Arizona Cardinal at number 4, and Indianapolis is going to give up at least a second-round pick there, and then you're going to at least get a second-round pick in the D-Hop trade, so you're getting that nasty Pro Bowl caliber guard atop round 2. That you're going to plug and play.
Well, and then, again, I love the fact you bring up the top of round 2, because, I mean, when this team has been picking high in drafts, we always focus on who their first pick is. But who was their second and third round picks in the great 2004 draft? It was Carlos Dansby and Darnell Dockett.
Wow.
Who were their second and third round picks when Kyler Murray was the first pick? Byron Murphy and Zach Allen. You're going to get good players in the second and third round because you're picking so high.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. So Jonathan Gannon also said you don't win any games in free agency. That was probably his biggest quote, the biggest soundbite that was run by all the local TV stations. But what about quarterback? Beyond Kyler, did he say anything as to whether the Cardinals are likely or not to add to that quarterback room in addition to Colt McCoy and David Blough?
I asked him specifically. I said, those were the two questions I felt like the fans had kind of battered me with.
All right, what was the first question?
The first one was, why are they signing so many linebackers in free agency?
I
asked that specifically, okay. And he basically said it's about having versatility and having people. And I ended up looking, if you're going to say you're going to a 4-3, and especially if you decide Isaiah Simmons isn't a linebacker for you, you only had two other linebackers on the roster, Blake Lynch and Zaven Collins. So to sign one of your own guys back in Ezekiel Turner and sign Kaiser White and
Josh Woods and Chris Barnes.
Oh, and Josh Woods.
Yep.
I mean, you needed some of those people. And of course, Turner and Woods are special teamers, so there's that.
Yeah. And by the way, real quick, think of how many snaps over the last couple of seasons that you got out of a Tanner Vallejo,
yes.
a Ben Neiman,
yes.
a Nick Vigil, although he's injured most of last season. But, I mean, those guys got a lot of snaps.
Yeah, yeah. So there's that. The quarterback, people want to know, is he going to – are these the quarterbacks they're running with? And he didn't really say that. He said – I said, are you going to be going with those two guys as your quarterbacks? And he said, well, the first thing he said was, we're always going to be looking to improve our roster, which he's going to, and that's with every position, which that's the vagueness you love when you talk to coaches. So I guess he's not closing the door, but then he went on to say how much he was looking forward to working with them and how much they wanted the playbook, which I also wanted to clarify, because I know some people were talking about this on the radio on Arizona Sports. I don't think they're allowed to have playbooks at this point. I don't think you're allowed to give players playbooks before your conditioning program starts. I think it's against the CBA. So when he said they wanted the playbook and I said, oh, no, not now, I'm not sure he could have if he wanted to. And so I think there were some people wondering, oh, does that mean they don't have a playbook yet? No, I don't think they're allowed to give those out yet, because they don't want teams to be able to say, we can give you your playbook and you can be working on it all year long.
That sounds correct. When Bruce Arians showed up, he couldn't do the same thing, but Drew Stanton already had it.
Yes.
From being with BA.
BA.
I think it, and we talked about this on a previous podcast, of there's a chance, I think, that re-signing David Blau has a lot to do with the fact that Kyler Murray and likely Colt McCoy aren't going to be ready for off-season workouts.
Sure.
And you need a quarterback. A lot can still happen. Maybe the Cardinals draft a quarterback late and they like him and they want to develop him, and that's your backup behind Colt. Maybe another team, when you start having to make roster cuts, you have a young quarterback in a similar sense to what Trace McSorley was, maybe never really got that chance, or you want to see what he has. So I'm not completely set that your three quarterbacks are going to be Kyler Murray, Colt McCoy, and David Blau throughout the season. I think maybe right now this was just, you like David Blau, maybe want to see more of him, but you also really need a quarterback through those workouts.
Well, there's going to be a fourth quarterback somewhere, undrafted, like Danny said, maybe drafted later. There's going to be a fourth quarterback, especially with Kyler not being able to take part in the offseason. I've heard some good things about Colt McCoy being okay in terms of being able to do offseason stuff. And we'll see. Again, they're on the field for the first time. Oh, and I guess this is since we last podcast. Their first time on the field will be, I believe it's April 27th, draft week. They get a mini camp, the extra mini camp, because they have a new coach. That'll be the first time they can be on the field, I believe. I don't know if they have any phase two work before then.
So that April 11th date is just starting with the workouts.
Yeah, it's April 11th is going to be the strength and conditioning. I don't know when phase two starts, which technically you can go on the field, but that's the helmetless stuff.
Gotcha.
But the first time you can go out there with a helmet and do some 11-on-11 is going to be phase three, and that would be April 27th, which they'll do the mini camp that week, or the 25th through the 27th. Yeah, because the 27th is the draft. So the 25th through the 27th is a voluntary veteran mini camp. There's the draft. You have 2 weeks later, you have the rookie mini camp, and in all those will be the voluntary OTAs will start to happen, and I can't believe we're already starting to talk about practice.
Crazy. Speaking of helmets, besides the number zero, one of the things that did come out of these owners' meetings with the voting was,
Guardian caps,
which were only worn by players of the line of scrimmage last training camp for a
couple weeks.
Right. But now, if I'm remembering from your article, it's going to include running backs as well, and it's during the season whenever there are contact practices, correct?
Yeah, so the guardian caps are those extra padding things that you see that some players had on their helmets last year. They're used to try and cut down on the number of head injuries that you would have. Last year, it was only through the first 2 to 3 weeks of training camp where they were required. Now they are going to be required throughout the entire training camp and preseason, and any helmeted practice during the season. You must wear them if you are an offensive lineman, a defensive lineman, a tight end, a linebacker, or a running back.
And fullback.
Oh, and fullback. Sorry, Wolf. So those will...
Of which there are none on this roster.
No.
Sorry, Wolf.
So yes, that'll be in there. And I expect that stuff to only grow. I mean, I wouldn't be completely shocked if every player ended up... I think Mike Tomlin already makes his players wear it all the time. So
you had that, the Guardian caps. The NFL owners also tabled the Eagles' proposal to create that 4th-and-20 alternative to the onside kick. As Rich McKay said, quote, there's not an appetite yet to have the onside kick go away, although they do want to improve the recovery rate. That's our trivia question here today. Danny and Darren, what was the recovery rate on onside kicks in the 2022 season across the NFL because it was at an all-time low of?
4%.
2.
4 is correct.
You cheated.
I didn't cheat. I was there yesterday.
He was in the press conference, so he heard the fact and figure. The target rate is 13-14%.
Yeah, I do.
That's
remember
never going to happen.
I'm like 13-14%. Yeah. What are you going to do?
Here's the other number.
It's
they got
never me. Been 13-14%, yeah. Has it?
No, they said once upon a time it was. They're
really?
Trying to get it back to that.
Okay.
No chance the way it's currently formulated and policed. I mean, come on. There's no way.
Well, let's face it. The reason it was 13-14% was because guys would go down there like kamikazes
yes.
and kill each other.
Exactly. Because Ron Wolfley was on the onside kick team.
I was just watching the Folktales episode of the McCown to Pool, and of course the onside kick was part of that thing and the whole Damian Anderson talking about it. Yeah. Fortunately, I was on the hands team that day, and I was not on the, you know, go kill the other guy team.
So roughing the passer will not be reviewable this coming season.
No.
That was a long shot from the get-go. Here's what I'm not really believing. The competition committee found that only 3 of the 80 roughing fouls that they examined were considered, quote, questionable. Nope, not buying that. Only 3 of the 80 were considered questionable as deemed by the competition committee. Sorry, I'm not buying that. Nobody wants to weigh in on that. I get it. Okay. Owners have also...
Danny's kind of smiling a little bit.
Owners have also
happy to be here.
Tabled the third quarterback rule. So that's not going to happen where they were going to designate one player on the inactive list or the practice squad to be eligible to play. Although they're going to vote on that again in May, so we'll see about that. They're also going to consider the flex scheduling for Thursday night.
I hate
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I agree.
In May.
I just...
Now I get a reaction. Here
there's
we go.
There's nobody who likes that idea.
I understand that.
Except for the owners.
That's the thing.
Al Michaels. Al Michaels likes it.
I understand that the NFL is a business, first and foremost. I understand that mindset. Almost like at what cost? If you're going to keep talking about player safety... And not only that, but these fans that are buying tickets and the games are going to get changed. How is all of that going to be handled? You're now playing 18 games and they didn't get an extra bye week when that changed. And now you're going to start adding in more Thursday night games and those can be flexed. And it's just, I'm not a fan.
I'm not a fan either.
I think that's the best, I should leave it at that.
I also feel for our football operations people. I'm like, all right, so you... are renting a hotel for a gigantic traveling party and all that comes with it, the meals and the meetings and all that stuff. And you're supposed to be there on a Saturday night. And now you have to call and say in 10 days. Yeah. Remember how we were coming on a Saturday night? Now we need to come on a Wednesday night. Like, how does that even work?
It should be if you're playing a Thursday, you should get a bye week or something else. It's just wild to me. Like all these changes, which are, in my opinion, seem like it is putting more of that focus on the business side of things and less on maybe the player safety and the fan side of things.
So did you see Giants owner John Mara?
I did. Those were good quotes.
He came out and said he's, quote, adamantly opposed to flex scheduling on Thursday nights and it's, quote, abusive, end quote, to fans who might have bought a plane ticket or have plans many months in advance to attend a certain game. To fans who maybe...
Yeah, I feel for them.
Even the local fans who can go on a Sunday but can't go on a school night, and especially at short notice. Now, short notice would be like 2 weeks' notice, apparently, a team would get. Because remember, coaches start game planning for that Thursday night game effective Friday, Saturday of the previous week. They get the game plan for the existing game put to bed, practice is done, and then if you listen to coaches, a lot of times they start game planning for that Thursday night opponent before you ever get to kick off of the previous Sunday game. So you're going to have to know in advance for all the reasons we just cited. But I'm telling you right now, Roger Goodell did not come off his opinion, And Amazon's paying a lot of money, and they got a lot of dog matchups last year. And Al Michaels was very vocal about it on the air as to how those matchups
stunk. That part of it? If you're going to be on Thursday night, understanding that how that affects the schedule for everything else we've talked about, isn't that part of it? Understanding.
See,
that?
I agree with John. John Mayer basically said, if we don't like the matchups, let's put better matchups out there.
Right.
I mean, it's not hard. Put better games in there.
Okay, but wait a minute. You're formulating the Thursday night matchup based on every team is going to show up on Thursday night. So it's not like Sunday night where only the good teams, the marquee teams, are going to play on Sunday night.
That's
you have
true.
To earn the right to play on Sunday night and to a lesser degree Monday night these days. Thursday night, as everybody takes their turn, it's a necessary nuisance.
If you're going to be able to flex, then obviously that's not going to be a thing anymore.
Right. There'll be some teams that play twice in a year on a Thursday night, and some teams, usually those teams at the bottom of the standings, who won't play at all on a Thursday night.
Wouldn't it be wild if in the future something happens to where, like, the last 4 weeks of a season, 5 weeks of a season, you only know your opponents, and they basically flex those last couple weeks, and if you're a season ticket member, you basically just say, hey, save my seats for these two home games, and maybe that's how they get by is... That's the time where you do all your flexing.
Actually, that's pretty progressive the way you're thinking, because how many fans already sell X number of games in their season ticket package? So maybe
it's just guaranteeing you have tickets to two home games. Maybe that's now two Thursdays. Maybe that's a Thursday, you know, and you just have to, if you're going to be flying out or, you know, I don't know.
Maybe the new norm is, you know, you get your season tickets and you're just, the reality is the last month or two of the season, be prepared to sell if you can make it.
Right.
Well, ultimately, I understand the amount of money being paid to Amazon, and I understand where that's going, but it'll hurt. I think it will hurt you with the home fans or the road fans or whatever it's going to be. But again, the people that ultimately are affected by this the most are the same people. The owners who want to make sure Amazon is happy are the ones that would be hurt on the bottom line. Now, there's collateral damage, players having to work on a short week. Like, I can't imagine, because the what I had heard was it was basically going to be like a 10-day out thing, like right before the Sunday before the week that it would be flexed. So you're talking about a team finds out at the end of 1 week they're about to play on a Sunday game that 2 weeks later or whatever it is, instead of playing on another Sunday game, you're going to be playing on a Thursday. Now, is that enough time to like get your head around it? I don't know.
And also, injuries. The you know, that decision comes made of sometimes if you're on a short week and a player could play, but do you want to play them? That comes into consideration when you're on a short week. And
wait till you have Thursday night load management.
That's what I was thinking. Feels like it's becoming is fans who get tickets and they travel to NBA games, and it's load management for the players you are paying to go watch.
You need to be real careful, because there's going to be a player or players at some point. They're like, yeah, I can't turn around like that.
Isn't there an NBA coming up real soon? NBA game coming up real soon. Sixers and Nuggets, and neither Joel Embiid nor Nikola Jokic are playing, both load management, and those are the two leading candidates for NBA MVP. So what would be a marquee matchup? Both guys are sitting out that game. What are we doing? And I heard someone go off, I think it was Jay Williams, saying, you know what? Look at the schedule and sit out the Hornets game or the Rockets game or the Spurs game. But when you have these marquee matchups that are on ESPN Thursday night with Dave Pasch courtside, right? You have to make those games. There's got to be an adjustment. That's my rant about the NBA on that front. As for the NFC West, let's look over the block wall real quick. Because if you didn't hear it, GM John Lynch at the owner's meeting said that Brock Purdy is the leader in the clubhouse, quote unquote, if healthy, to be the Niners' starting quarterback. Over Trey Lance, who they gave up 3 first-round picks for to draft number 3 overall, Brock Purdy is the leader in the clubhouse. Seahawks made it official. They inked Bobby Wagner to a 1-year deal worth up to $7 million. So Bobby Wagner back with Coach Double Rainbow in Seattle. You have that. And then here's a holy cannoli stat on the Rams. Do you realize that the Rams' top 6 defenders last season by snap count will not return? Think about that. Because Aaron Donald was injured so much. And, I mean, they, you know, I've been talking about how the Cardinals and what's been going on this offseason, starting with the coaching staff and then going with the roster, has been one of the purge movies. I think there's five purge movies. I've labeled the Cardinals offseason that sixth purge movie. It's nothing compared to the Rams.
Can I just say that I'm impressed that Paul knows how many Purge movies there are?
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
I got a teenage punk at home who likes the Purge movies, so...
I've been worried about that a little bit.
Yeah, that was... You're right. Thankfully, he's grown out of it, thankfully, like a lot of things. So, and then I love the letter from Kevin Demoff, their CEO, the team president, to Rams season ticket holders, where he said that the Rams expect to contend for the NFC West title and, quote, make a run towards the Super Bowl.
This year?
Yes. That's in the same letter where he said, we've taken all of our salary cap pain in 2023 and project to have more than $60 million in cap space in 2024. So I'm not sure you can have that cake and eat it too, but it's both phrases are in the letter to season ticket holders for the Rams.
I mean, if the point is to win a Super Bowl and this is the cost you pay, I think a lot of people would say it's worth it because you still have that ring.
And look, you know, maybe you're well served to take all that salary cap pain in 2023. If we were to say, if we were to go ahead and juxtapose that on the Cardinals, what if you were to say, you know what? Your franchise quarterback is coming back from a torn ACL. It's an unknown. All indications are he's tracking ahead of schedule. It's going very well. It's still ultimately an unknown. You're going to take your pain in 2023. Whether it's D-Hop in a trade and, you know, any D-Hop trade still leaves you with $21, $22 million in dead cap money, right?
Yeah, but you could take that all this year.
Exactly.
And then it's wiped out.
That's my point.
Yes, I know.
And so, yes, I just wonder if, guess what? There are two teams in the division who might have that approach to 2023.
I could see it. So. I mean, it makes sense. It's hard, but it makes sense.
Anything else? Anything else anybody wants to rant and rave about? I mean, I could go off about how I heard another stat that Arizona has the third highest gas price in America.
Yeah, when did gas get so expensive?
Why do we have the third highest gas price in America behind California and Hawaii? Darren, you're an Arizona native, are you not?
I'm not. But
you're not, okay.
I've been here long enough.
Long time. Please explain.
Wait, where are you from?
Originally?
Yeah.
Michigan.
Oh.
I lived in Alaska, too.
I feel like I don't even know you anymore. After you had me pick you up from the car dealership, and I realized you didn't drive the car I thought you drove anymore.
You know, if you wanted...
I didn't realize you guys were that close of acquaintances now. I mean, it's good.
Oh, yeah. Guess who Darren's first call was last week when he needed to be picked up and taken to work?
That's true.
That was me.
No, that's interesting because there's a Seinfeld episode that, you know, taking someone to the airport is sort of...
Oh, that's a love language to me.
Is like a threshold of being really good friends or not.
Yeah,
if you feel comfortable asking someone to take you to the airport. Now, this one, asking someone to pick you up from the mechanic. I don't know. That's somewhat, now, that's close.
Well,
one
of
the
reasons I was close to my apartment.
That's
and
why
it's
one of the reasons I was
work.
It's close to both things.
Okay.
And I had a feeling when I had reached out to her that she was still at home, so she.
I will say I don't know how you drove that. We had the same car. I don't know how you drove it because you looked very squished and uncomfortable in my passenger seat.
Because
I drive a sedan.
I don't know how to answer that.
Okay. I'm sorry, what were we talking about?
Change the subject because we're going to get to the Ian Rappaport box in a minute, and I don't want to talk about that.
Gas prices.
Oh, yeah, I don't know why it's so expensive. Okay. It's very disappointing, and we'll just move on from
all right,
that.
There we go. Any other takeaways from the owners' meetings and or the party that we missed, Darren? Any other tales from the front?
No, I really don't have any. I said hello to Mike Disner. Saw Mike Disner there.
Really? Is still working for the Lions?
He's the VP with the Lions. He's like high up.
Oh, I thought he was the cap guy. No.
No.
Wow, okay.
He's a bigwig with the Lions.
So there's Chris Spielman, and then there's Disner.
I'm not 100% sure that would be the order, but that's just me.
Gotcha, all right. Okay. Well,
former Cardinals cap guy, Mike Disner, by the way.
So, all right, well, I'm looking here at anything else that maybe we forgot to, you know, cover in this edition.
No. Opening day is coming up, and I've decided I'm going to try and be a baseball fan. Now, am I going to follow the Rangers or the Diamondbacks? Two great options from what I know about baseball.
I'm going to go see the Savannah Bananas Friday night.
Are you?
Yes.
That'll
Where
be
is that taking place?
They're at Scottsdale Stadium Friday night.
That'll be a good time.
That will be a good time.
That'll be a good
That's
time.
That's a nice stadium.
You should make a TikTok while you're there.
Sure. I don't know how to do that. But
by the way, Danny, to answer your question, if you don't become a Diamondbacks fan, then we're going to have issues on Cardinals Underground.
I went to
a
Diamondbacks game last year, and I had a lot of fun. I might try and go for opening day, or not opening day, but I guess their first homestand.
Home opener.
What I'm looking for.
Yeah. All right. There you go.
You lived in Missouri, so there's also another team.
No, you live in Arizona. No. You support the Arizona
team. I did go
to
a Cardinals game when I was in college once. St. Louis.
You go to Cardinals games all the time.
Good one, Darren.
Thanks.
Did you know that Kay Adams, of formerly of NFL Network and now of Up and Adams, she was the former in-stadium host for the St. Louis Cardinals.
All right, we got to get to the end Mizzou of this podcast. We don't need all this Cardinals Missouri right. stuff.
I do have something to add on the zero jersey.
Okay, yes. Here we go.
If, as you guys kind of hinted at earlier, if Will Anderson was a candidate for zero, he would have to be listed as a linebacker and not a defensive end.
That's true.
Because defensive ends cannot wear zero. It's only linebacker.
That's a great point.
Mm. Linebackers and some other positions, but... Yeah, so you have franchise numbers determined by position and apparently the ability to wear number zero. But the most famous number zero, I was telling some people yesterday about this, or on Tuesday, was Pat Patriot. I'm a big mascot fan all around the league. Pat Patriot was the mascot, or is the mascot, of the New England Patriots. And he used to wear number zero up until 2002. And NFL Films was following Robert Kraft one time. There's a second mention of Robert Kraft in this podcast, go figure. But they were following Robert Kraft before a game, and a fan came up, and Robert Kraft was mic'd up. Fan came up, said, "Hey, we got to do something about that mascot's number." And he's like, "What number is he wearing?" He goes, "He wears zero." And Robert Kraft goes, "Yeah, we'll get on that." The very next week, he was wearing number one. Because I guess in some people have negative connotations to the number zero. Like, oh, that guy's a zero, you know?
It's a mascot.
Right.
Seattle's mascot wears zero. I found on Twitter yesterday.
Blitz.
Sorry, he does. I didn't know Blitz did.
Blitz. That's the
That's their mascot.
Okay. Well.
Okay.
All right. Well, look.
That was a fun one.
Yeah. You know, Olms, you should make that an episode of the Pash Pod because you know the two of you, Pash is into ripping all the teams' mascots when we grow around the NFL the last 20 years.
Jim Omohundro mascot.
Sourdough Sam almost stormed the booth one year.
Pash and Wolf do not like Sourdough Sam. They think he's soft.
I mean, what's
like
up?
Sourdough.
I mean, they bag on Sourdough Sam. One of these years, I'm going to tell Sourdough Sam down on the sideline, and he's going to give those guys a what for.
Too much sourdough. I'm hungry, and I don't want to be talking about this anymore.
That'll do it for this edition of Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Pacific Office Automation.